baby.
Yeah, right. But no, you're absolutely right.
Here, this kind of feels maybe lazy a little bit.
Welcome to Set Cheddar Park.
Some movie screenings.
Why not, you know?
Yeah, at that point, why not?
It's got to be Saturday somewhere. It does sound familiar.
It's hilarious. Hello! I think we did like 5 shows on this movie.
My name is Tom Cole.
Oh, you bite your tongue if this does not hold up.
Happy Saturday, Robert.
Happy Saturday to you.
How's the world treating you?
Pretty good. Yesterday was like almost 90 and today it's like 40. So a lot of roller coaster of weather.
Flip-flopping.
Typical. It's a flip-flopping weekend.
One of my cousins posted on Facebook, "Yay, welcome back, flip-flop weather." And I misconstrued that as the weather slipping back. And I was like, why do you like that? And it's like, because it's nice out. I was like, oh, you mean flip-flops.
Actual flip-flops. I still call them flip-flops. I'm glad other people do too.
Me too. Yeah. We are having a banner day in Los Angeles. It is a beautiful 71.
Oof. Perfect.
Perfect. Not too hot, not too breezy and cold, just right there. But great show tonight. You're listening to the podcast, Set Cheddar Saturdays with Robert Patterson. Always check out his website at setcheddar.com. Fun show tonight. Robert, we're going to get into what you've been watching. I want to kick this off first. I've been watching some grim things. Interesting, but grim. American Manhunt. The Boston Marathon bombing. Have you seen this?
I started watching the first half hour and then I had to go do something else. So how far are you?
I watched the whole thing.
Okay.
Like most documentaries.
How's it end?
What happens? You know, like most documentaries, it could have been done in 2 hours or one episode.
Yeah.
But I get it. You want to drag it out. But the whole timeline of the marathon ended in halfway part of the third episode. So you're like, there's still 40 minutes left. Like, what do they do? And then they added the steps after the conviction, and they showed like how the FBI like had to keep searching if there were other bombers. And then they, at the end, they showed that Tamaroff, I don't remember his name, the bomber that's in jail that lived. He was sentenced to death and then they overturned it. And then the Supreme Court overturn that appeal, so he's back on death row, which I didn't know. So it was kind of interesting, but overall it was just okay.
Well, I'll still take a look. I remember my sister and I were in Vancouver at that time, and I remember my sister was actually, she's doing an accreditation review, and I remember she says all the Canadians, they're so apologetic about this happening. Yeah, and like America's like, we're not surprised ever, you know, like at this point.
I know.
That any of this stuff happens, yeah. And now it, obviously not bombings everywhere, but, you know, obviously we have tragedies 3 times a week.
Yeah, I know. It's we've become numb to it, which is epidemic of its own. So, but you see, you were in Vancouver when the bombing happened, 2016?
Yeah, and that's why I kind of remember that specifically, that we were getting through the Canadian lens of it happening.
One thing about the bombing that was interesting, and I'm a big fan of the movie Patriots Day with Mark Wahlberg. That's in my great Boston movie list. Those cops that were chasing him and doing their job, you know, the FBI and all the teams, those guys were up for like 72 hours. They were going to start putting in skeleton crews because some of the guys were actually going to the hospital from exhaustion. And then that's when they found him in the boat. So it was really interesting when you look at the timeline, how they were really starting to pull out and send in other people because their bodies couldn't stay awake. And then they found him in a boat and it was like early hours of the day. And it was really,
I forgot about that until that takes place in the first part. And I totally forgot how that occurred and that kind of timeline. And obviously in hindsight, you didn't know like what else was out there, you know, what else was targeted. At that time, you just didn't know.
You didn't know. Yeah, they were worried about, because they were going to New York when they hijacked that guy's car. So they assumed that there were going to be more bombings in New York and, you know, really scary stuff. But yeah, so I watched that. And then I watched Waco, American Manhunt. It reminds me of The Office when they're like, yeah, what is this, another Waco? And Aaron's like, it's pronounced Wacko.
Aaron was the best.
Erin was the best.
I loved her facial expressions.
Her eyes are a 2, her left ear is a 4, her legs are a 7 at best, and then that gives her a 16, far from a perfect 40. Am I just crazy?
So is this the Waco part 2, the aftermath, or is this the part 1?
This is, I'm not sure. I think it's just a standalone.
Standalone, okay. I know Showtime has a something that just started as well, but...
Yes. I get them all confused because there was Waco from like 3 years ago that they did with I forget the actor's name, but they did Rory Culkin was in it. Yeah. That was a really good.
So Showtime has a follow up to that. I know that just started or is coming out, but So if you need more Waco in your life,
I do. Well, see, we always need more Waco. This one was interesting. It was a documentary and. I kind of thought, like, what else can you see? We've seen everything. But they actually did include hours of unseen footage from the, like, ATF agents and people on the ground. And it was pretty graphic, pretty intense. Gotcha. So it was interesting, though.
Yeah. So if you want a big down weekend.
Yeah. If you want to get depressed, watch Waco. What about you? What have you been watching?
But before speaking of Boston, I don't know. I've been catching a couple of... Ben Affleck's Dunkin' Donuts commercials.
Oh, he's so great.
He talks about the Departed.
Yeah, with the Departed, and they're giving the donuts, and it's like, yeah, well, some of us work, you know. Some of us work. Is that my daughter?
Oh, they should totally do that.
Oh.
Sean
is that my muffin?
Sean Penn pumping Dunkin' Donuts.
Is that my muffin?
My muffin in there. Somebody's got to do it. Come on.
What do you think? What's your policy on Ben Affleck? Do you like him?
Yes and no. Obviously, you know, I love the town and a lot of his movies, and I liked Argo, and then I love Jennifer Garner. I'll say that.
Yeah.
But then there's other parts. I'm like, yeah. What are you doing? What are you doing here?
Right. What are you doing? What were you thinking? Yeah.
But he seems like a good guy.
I do like the Batman line that we make fun of before.
Which one is that?
Batman versus Superman, where he's, I think they're in a cemetery. And he's like, "Where'd you hear that name?" or something like that.
Oh,
that
Martha.
Where'd you hear that name? What'd you say?
Already blocked that out.
Yeah, but no, he's fun.
So I'm still watching Picard, which I think they have one more episode left. So I've been super impressed with this season 3.
Really?
Like, you don't even need to watch season 1, 2, I don't think. This is probably one of the better than any of the Next Generation movies by far.
Really?
So it is. I've been impressed. So
cool.
And I'm like, I think they have one more episode left, and I'm like. Don't fumble at the
screw it up.
Yeah, I said, please don't fumble at the end. But even if they do fumble a little bit, it's been worth it. So just between story and acting and special effects, I think it's been really good. So So they, which also makes me think they'll keep going and ruin it for the next. You know, if they
screw it up, people.
Who knows what they'll do? But anyway. Yeah. I decided to put on Marnie, Alfred Hitchcock's Marnie, which I've only seen once before. And watching it, I'm like, oh, that's why I only saw it once before. Same thing. Alfred Hitchcock has his good and bad. Like, this is just, to me, there's not too much to this one, you know?
Yeah. This was the one Tippi Hedren did after the birds.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and Sean's in it.
Yeah. Oh, yes. It has its. They should do a mashup with Darby O'Gill and.
Oh yeah! Thank
Marnie,
God.
Marnie O'Gill and the Little People.
Marnie.
But that would be amazing. It almost reminds me of a little bit of M. Night. You know, some good ones that he'll always be remembered for, and be an instant classic director, and some ones that.
Yeah.
We just don't even talk about.
That's a really good point.
And not that Marnie is the worst, but.
No.
But yeah, we.
But just yeah, it's.
The top 5 Hitchcock, and the rest is kind of float away. So
yeah, he had a long career, and his great movies are deservingly so praised a lot. But not a lot of people watch those other ones because there's a reason for that.
I put the bubble, even though I couldn't get through all of it, so I may try to pick it up again. Did you try to watch that one?
Which one's the bubble?
It's a movie that they're trying to make during the pandemic, and it kind of wants to be another Christopher Guest movie where, you know, hilarity ensues and all these different actor personalities. Yeah. And then
it's Judd Apatow.
Yeah. And I was like, it feels like it should be good on the surface, but then I don't know. So no, it's a movie to fall asleep by.
Did you fall asleep to it?
I did. And it's one of those, like, you wake up and I'm like, I don't think I really care.
What am I doing with this? Yeah. I'll stay away from the bubble.
Yeah. I might not finish it, but, Heartbreakers is one of my favorites from, was it 22 years ago now, I think?
Yeah. That is a great movie. I love that movie.
Love Sigourney Weaver, Gene Hackman, even Jennifer Love Hewitt.
I like when they break the glass in the restaurant in the beginning, or early scene, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, that's actually genius. It's terrible. You're a terrible person, but that's amazing.
I love it. And then when her friend... she does something similar. She's like, I'll get today's lunch. She goes, thank you. And she pulls the glass out of her purse.
I'll get today's lunch. Thank you.
Perfect. I don't know. So it's one of those kind of every 3-year movies that I watch and I still laugh at. So
that is fun. It is a great movie.
Scorny, you can't go wrong.
You can't. You cannot go wrong.
Yeah. So Rise of the Pink Ladies, or Grease, Rise of the Pink Ladies, has started on Paramount Plus a week or two ago. So,
yes. How is that?
Very Glee-ish.
Okay. I can see them going in that direction, for sure.
Which I feels like, I feel like we're past this point of kids spontaneously going into song. They have moments where it's like, okay, this is kind of, you know, it is Grease-ish, you know, even though it's Vancouver. It's just fine.
Does it feel like you're in the Grease universe?
Not quite. Sometimes it almost takes that. So Jackie Hoffman plays assistant principal McGee. So this takes place, I think, 4 years before Grease happens. So there's a couple characters from the original that are in this one. I won't do spoilers, but as just kind of seeds and so forth. But it's interesting, of course. And of course, now it's kind of layered with social commentary, as we do in 2023, but fair enough. So it does. Right. It did have a Carrie moment for sure. I'm like, ooh,
really?
A little dark. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Where there's one, the snotty girls are ridiculing and publicly shaming one of the other girls at the football rally, and I was like, ooh. I was like, this is felt like a not pouring pig's blood on you at the prom, but kind of close.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, I was like, ooh, I almost wish they went down the darker route, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. At that point, just.
Yeah. And then it's also a weird counterpoint with, you know, funny songs. Who's going to win city council?
Jang, 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 bop. I'm going to stab your face. Whoa, whoa.
But yeah.
Yeah. So, own it at that point.
I'm a Grease and Grease 2 fan, so, and Grease Live fan as well.
You are.
Continue to give it a watch. So,
keep us posted on that.
Yeah, Entertainment Weekly. So last year was the 40th anniversary for Grease 2, but for some reason, I think they just released a big article this year on the oral history of Grease 2. And I was kind of surprised they had quite a few comments from Michelle Pfeiffer, which usually I didn't feel like she talked about this movie too much. But
no, I don't think so.
But she had some good things to say, and she still has her Pink Lady jacket and bowling ball and bag from the movie.
Yes.
Which is awesome to hear that she has that.
Yeah, she's retained.
Yeah, she retains her stuffing and the Zanoni stuff.
Does Grease 2, does Rise of the Pink Ladies feel to Grease like Cobra Kai does for Karate Kid? Does it feel like it's just updated more? Or like...
No, it doesn't have that kind of coy self-referential. And granted, it's just started going, and it kind of wants to be its own thing. But we'll see. No, kind of nothing like that. But
is it a prequel to Grease?
Yeah, so like 4 years before Grease. So.
Okay.
So that's why I said there's a couple younger characters that may show up in Grease. But yeah, so obviously I'll continue to give it a watch and kind of see what they do.
Yeah, I'm interested. I'd be curious to watch that.
yeah, so I'll keep you posted.
Stalker Channing should play herself in there, but still her, like, not de-aged or anything.
Just
throw her in there.
Just keep her like, we have a new senior in the Rydell, everybody. It's Betty Rizzo.
It's Betty Rizzo, new senior. Oh, she's the best.
It'll be, what was the Drew Barrymore movie where she came back to high school?
Oh,
whatever movie that is. So they will just kind of do the same thing where she comes back and we're like, yeah, she's a senior.
She's a senior.
Was that it? Grossy Josie?
Never been kissed.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
She's a senior. Just roll with it.
But yeah, so it feels like there's good moments. So I'll keep watching. And they did a good job like recreating the Frosty Palace. So I'll give them kudos.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I'm really interested in this actually now. Yeah. It's kind of cool.
I took a rewatch to Falling Down. I knew it had its 30th anniversary a couple months ago. So I thought, I don't think I've revisited since the 90s. So I just kind of gave it another watch.
Michael Douglas.
Not as good as the individual clips, you know, that you kind of remember or see.
Yeah.
It does kind of feel like it's kind of sewn together. And in this day and age, I think he was not... kind of felt like it was maybe tried to be the anti-hero in that movie, and then and now you're like, no, he's a psycho, complete psychopath.
Yeah, he's a terrible man.
Yeah. And maybe it was back, I just feel like back then it was kind of like, yeah, food prices are too high, you know, like,
yeah, shoot him. McDonald's. I wanted breakfast at 11:30 or whatever. Yeah. The scene is, remember, he wants like breakfast or something.
And now you're just, you know, a gun in a fast food restaurant, like, oh my God.
Yeah. You know, that movie doesn't age well in the sense of plot. I mean, that's very hard because it's kind of a reality. It is a reality now. So it's like kind of tough to watch. But personally, I think as a standalone level, I mean, he gives a good performance. But yeah. I agree. Falling Down looks kind of sewn together, and the isolated clips are like better than.
And, Barbara Hershey, like every 15 minutes she's on the phone. I don't know.
Oh no. It's Robert Duvall is in there. It's like the cop or whatever.
He plays the cop, and Tuesday Weld plays his kind of cuckoo wife at home.
Right.
And so forth. So yeah, so there's good moments. So it reminded me of, I felt like a lot of the 90s, it's like, why would you ever want to live in LA? They just literally show the underbelly of the worst of those early 90s movies, you know, like,
oh yeah,
crime and smog and everything else. It's like, I'm surprised I ever wanted to go back to LA.
And even the construction crews, like the open road construction left everywhere.
Yeah.
That underpass that he's in, I mean, there's a million of them in LA, but I know where that one is. And I remember I was actually stuck in traffic there, and I thought about that scene, and I was like, I get it. I get the meltdown. I get why you're...
Just get out of your car. I'm going home.
Yeah, just get out and start walking. But yeah, that I love his haircut in that. Like, he's like an accountant or something. He plays the nerdy... He's got the white short-sleeve shirt.
I think Department of Defense, and so he looks like a 1950s, pretty intentional look and hair and... costume in the movie, obviously kind of stuck in there. They're kind of making a pretty intentional reflection, but you know, and it's Joel Schumacher. He knows how to make a slick film, that works in any genre. So he's been pretty impressed that way. So we'll have to probably do a whole Joel Schumacher retro.
There's so many good and bad ones to pull from.
So I think that's mostly, I've probably been watching something else too here and there, but otherwise that's what I've been watching in my spare time.
I like it. I like it a lot. I forgot to mention, I'm sure you have seen this movie, Robert, or you will. I did go see Super Mario Brothers, the movie.
Oh.
Have you seen that one a few times already, I'm sure?
I was washing my hair, otherwise I would have. I've not even played the game, so.
You've never played the original Mario?
No, so I don't understand any of it. I see the Universal Studios, which I think you went. Did you check it out, Mario World?
No, we haven't been yet.
Okay, gotcha.
We were going to go on Easter, but we ended up not going. Gotcha. With the movie and dinner, it was like a lot to cram in.
Gotcha. Two things.
It was ambitious.
So how was the movie?
If you're a fan, you wouldn't like it. If you're a fan of the games and you played them, there's a certain air of nostalgia that you're like, oh, this is so cool, and I remember they did this. But it's a terrible movie if you don't like it. It's entertaining music-wise. They actually licensed a lot of good songs in there, and I really like the Easter eggs. There's a lot of Easter eggs from other Nintendo games in there.
Okay.
That were pretty cool.
Which would just fly by me, like.
I kept ordering drinks, and I think my wife and I were the only adults in there that weren't accompanying kids. And it was the greatest like experience ever. It was like Guinness is flowing and Mario on the big screen. I'm like, oh, I've been waiting 30 years to be able to drink beer and watch Mario. And it was right there in front of me. It was fantastic.
It sounds like something wonderful.
Something wonderful. It's only money.
I like Universal Studios, so I see these behind the scenes videos, and they're like, and look at this, there's a little hidden thing that's on the princess. I'm like, I have no idea what these people are talking about or why it's so impossible to get in there.
Get you a Nintendo.
I don't think that would be a good idea, but I'm more like appalled by the wait lines for, because you know me, I don't.
Oh yeah, no, can't do it. Mm-mm. No, can't have it.
Yeah, it's like, what do these people do all day? Just wait around?
That's all you do is wait.
Wait.
There were lines this weekend I saw for the Easter Bunny was at one of the beaches, and the lines were like a mile long. I'm like, you know, there are better things you could do.
Yeah.
Besides wait.
To see a fake bunny. Speaking of bunnies, later this month, I know Fatal Attraction, the new TV series.
Oh, yes. Oh, don't kill the bunny.
I don't know how I feel. Like, so I love Josh Jackson and Dr. Death. I mean,
yeah.
So I was like, oh, he is, surprised me.
Yeah.
And then I see the clips for the new Fatal Attraction. I'm like, oh, what are we doing? But which that location, I think I actually posted about it. That location's been used in the house they have in the TV series, been used in a couple things. So including Laura Dern's house in Jurassic Park 3.
Laura Dern. That's cool that they put that in there.
But
where's the house again?
It's in Pasadena.
Okay.
South Pasadena somewhere. But
cool. Well, yeah, keep us posted on that. You're gonna divulge into it?
I will watch it. I can't not watch those type of genre thing. So
yeah.
And ridicule.
Robert knows best. Keep us posted. Okay, we're going to get into, we've been revisiting the Razzies year by year, and today is the fourth Razzies. This originally premiered on April 8th, 1984. We got some cool ones in here. Some films that we have talked about a lot on this show. So, Robert, why don't you take it away? What do we got?
All right. We usually kind of go from the bottom, so come in true Oscar fashion. So we're going to start with worst musical score. Some of the nominees were Carell, which actually I remember seeing. We rented my friend Ellie and I. This was the era where you just go to Blockbuster and you run out of things to see, so you just randomly pick up things. And so this one had an interesting box, but it's kind of an art house film, so we didn't know what to do with it at the time, you know.
Oh, okay,
so,
yeah.
But it was fine. So
Carell,
Superman 3, which I don't remember it having a bad score. I know they get. I can't remember the name of the composer. We're just kind of riff on John
Williams. Giorgio Moroder.
Score, but it seemed fine to me. Obviously, not enough to be that bad.
And he also did Scarface that year. Oh,
I did not know that.
The year before. So.
Yentl, which.
Yentl. Yentl.
I am sure Yentl. Barbara Streisand film that she ever does since the 80s to.
Oh,
to
yeah. Her.
Will be on this, so.
Oh yeah.
And the other nominee before we get to the winner was Yor, the Hunter from the Future, which I have not seen. I've watched the trailer for.
Yor.
But it looks like, I don't think it's a canon film, but it looks like a.
Oh yeah, it does look like a canon film for sure.
But the winner is The Lonely Lady.
Oh, The Lonely Lady.
Lonely Lady. So we will talk about yeah. This film will come up a lot as we kind of go through this list. So we'll just kind of let that one sit for now.
Okay. Okay. I like it. Congratulations, Lonely Lady.
Worst New Star. So nominees included Lonnie Anderson for Stroker Ace, which I assume she was already a TV star at that point with WKRP. I mean,
yeah.
So I'm not sure if New Star, if that kind of counts. So,
you know, she was going to originally be, or I don't know if she was going to be, but she was considered for Three's Company. She was going to be one of the girls. Yeah. Which I don't remember. I think it was the Suzanne Summers one, but
gotcha.
Yeah, she was in that zone then.
Which reminds me, every time we're about Lonnie Anderson, that one of my sister's favorite experiences ever was Celebrity Autobiography in New York. And we went to the VIP version. And so it was during Gay Pride Week in New York, too. So they had more celebrities than usual.
Oh, yeah.
Celebrities reading other celebrity autobiographies. So they actually had three people on stage. One reading from Lonnie Anderson's, one reading from Burt Reynolds, and one of Burt Reynolds' assistants also wrote a biography, like a tell-all. And so they would all be on stage reading different passages and so forth like that.
Oh, that's so cool.
It was just a fantastic time. So
that is a fantastic time.
Other nominees, have no idea. Reb Brown for Your Hunter from the Future.
Reb Brown.
Finola Hughes from Staying Alive, which Staying Alive, if you don't know, is the sequel to Saturday Night Fever.
And it's so bad.
It is, and just not. It's one of those. It's almost not quite Highlander 2, where like people just act as if it doesn't exist, you know?
Right.
It's totally unnecessary. And John Travolta had become even a huger star since that time, and it was just unnecessary. So.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Some non-human nominees here: Cindy and Sandy from Jaws 3D.
Oh, the dolphins.
I am wearing right
yes,
now.
Yes, there it is. Oh, it's such a cool shirt. Oh, it's so cool.
Poor Cindy and Sandy. They were doing their best. They were pretty good considering.
Yeah. They didn't even want to be there. They didn't have a choice.
They're like, we have to keep doing this stuff.
Cindy and Sandy.
And that's not even their real names, I don't think.
No. Yeah, probably not.
Those are the character names. They didn't have their real names. Razzies, get it together.
SeaWorld.
But the winner for Worst New Star was Lou Ferrigno for Hercules. But I would probably beg to argue he was probably already the Incredible Hulk by that time. I don't know.
Yeah, he was for sure. But have you seen Hercules, this movie?
Probably once years ago. It's like a not worth.
Okay.
Yeah. Well,
because it says Italian American. Is it like subtitled kind
for
of
some
thing?
Reason, I thought it was dubbed.
Okay.
If I'm thinking
maybe
of what I'm thinking of, but so.
All right. Congratulations, Lou. Yes.
Worst supporting actress, Bebe Best, for The Lonely Lady.
Lonely Lady.
Which the year before, I think she was in Star Trek 2. So she's actually one of my. I do like her as an actress. And then I remember the next year she was in The Day After. And I think she passed away not too shortly, I think in the late 80s or early 90s as well. So.
Oh, no.
Finola Hughes for Staying Alive again. Amy Irving for Yentl. Now, I feel like Amy gets in these lists a lot. I feel like somebody has it out for her at the Razzies.
She has been. Yeah, she's been nominated a lot for these Razzies. Yeah.
And she hasn't seen that bad of an actress, but apparently somebody doesn't like her.
Spielberg.
Yep.
Spielberg.
Yeah, maybe he's the one saying, here's a couple extra bucks.
Keep her down.
Tear her down. Diana Scarwood was nominated for Strange Invaders.
Strange Invaders.
The previous winner for Mommy Dearest the year before.
Yeah.
She is one of my favorites, though, too, especially from Psycho 3. The winner was Sybil Danning for Chained Heat and Hercules.
Oh.
And who can forget her in Rob Zombie's Halloween 2?
Double duty this time.
Right.
Halloween.
As the nurse that should have been long retired.
Yes, she was still checking that heart pressure.
I'm sure she was fine. She was Sybil Danning, you know.
Yeah. Congratulations, Sybil, on your two wins.
Worst supporting actor, Joseph Cowley for The Lonely Lady. Louis Gossett Jr. for Jaws 3D. Anthony Holland, also for The Lonely Lady.
Clean it up.
Richard Pryor for Superman 3, which he did the best he could in there.
He did. He served as, he played the roles, you know, Richard Pryor would.
He did what he was asked to do.
Exactly.
The winner that year was Jim Nabors.
Jim Nabors, Stroke Race. Congratulations, Jim.
I barely remember Stroke Race. It'd be on the cable. You know, it's one of those you turn off the TV. It better to have the TV turned off than watch Stroke Race. But
you would see that on here and there, though. Mm. Sometimes you still see it poking around, and you're like, yeah, no.
But I didn't even realize he was in it, so.
Stroke there, Race, congratulations.
Worst Actress nominees, Lonnie Anderson, again for Stroke Race. Linda Blair for Chained Heat.
Linda Blair. She was of age now. They didn't have to retract this.
No. Yeah, she was. And she made her, I think the next year she'll probably show up for another movie in this category. But but yeah, she, you know what? You take what you're offered too. She wasn't getting offered. And she was, it's kind of that awkward stage. But
Yeah. You're in between. And,
Faye Dunaway for The Wicked Lady, which I have not seen. I might need to check that out.
Wicked Lady.
Olivia Newton-John for Two of a Kind.
How dare them.
Which is...
I haven't seen this one. Is it a good film?
Her and John Travolta reunited. Okay. So was kind of a big deal. Together again. But the 80s hair instead. I was 13 looking forward to it. You know, I was like, oh, but you know, together on the big screen. It's the same thing. It's almost like Xanadu. Well, actually not like Xanadu, but the songs are better than the movie.
The
music video is kind of better than the movie. So,
it's not enough to carry it.
No, it's one that, you know, they're cute enough together. But it's one of those weird kind of fate where,
no,
two people need to fall in love. That shouldn't, you know, like,
here we go.
And
here we go.
John Travolta. Yeah. So always good, you know, obviously to see them together. And I love Olivia. But sure. It's one of those things you pop on every once in a while. Like, oh, I probably missed. I just misremember this. And you're like, oh, no, there's a reason.
There's a reason. There it is. That's why.
And the winner was Pia Zadora for The Lonely Lady.
The Lonely Lady. Congratulations.
We'll just wait till the end before we dig into that movie. But
okay. All right.
Worst actor, Lloyd Bachner for The Lonely Lady. I think you probably might be guessing where the best picture might be going. I'm not going to give spoilers here. But
you can put it together. Yes. It's coming up.
Lou Ferrigno for Hercules. Barbara Streisand for Yentl, which... Okay. As a kid, this was the worst movie. It would take hours.
Yeah.
Fill up hours on HBO before the next movie.
Yeah, you just have to keep going back to it.
And I didn't get it. And
Yentl.
Papa. John Travolta was also nominated for Two of a Kind and Staying Alive. So he was just had a double whammy year. But interestingly, the winner was Christopher Atkins for A Night in Heaven.
Interesting. Night in Heaven is our American romantic drama with John G. Avildsen, who helmed, as we know, all those movies.
The last thing I would call it would be American romantic drama, but obviously it's a male stripper movie.
Is it really?
Yeah. Which it's amazing. You would think John Travolta would be a shoo-in, especially with the double whammy. But same thing. I think they were still... making him pay penance for the Blue Lagoon. I don't know.
Oh yeah, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You must redeem yourself.
Worst director nominees included Joe Alves from Jaws 3D, which met him briefly at the Hollywood Show last year and had him sign my Jaws 3D Blu-ray.
Oh, how cool.
He said something strange, like, I can't remember how he said it. It's like, well, it's not, everybody has their thing or something like that. I'm like, just own it, you know.
Everybody has their thing.
Yeah, but
what do you mean? He was defending it?
No, he was just kind of. He probably just doesn't appreciate that people love it.
Oh yeah, he's an old guy too.
Yeah, so but you know
what? Yeah, he should. You should own it at that point.
Yeah, it's kind of almost like, it's almost like Superman 3 versus Superman 4. We're like, we thought Superman 3 was the worst until.
Until. But you know, yeah. I mean, I was going to say, you know, we talk about how bad Superman 4 is and how bad Jaws 3 is, or we both love the movie. But
yeah,
I mean, for the rest of history, though, your movie, no matter how bad it is or how poor of a job you did, it will always be cataloged with one of the greatest movies ever. So for the rest of time, people will love Jaws and they will undoubtedly watch the other ones, just like Jurassic Park 3. They will watch that and Superman 4. So it is something very proud, I think, you should own, no matter how bad you think it is. It's
you're part of it. So.
Yeah, you're part of this great thing.
Brian De Palma for Scarface was a nominee. So
it was ahead of its time.
It was. I remember, and obviously I was kind of a little too, I did not see this in the theater, and I didn't quite, I feel like this movie came about more after cable versus kind of in the theaters. And then it kind of became this thing. But I don't remember it kind of being hated at all. And this is the only time it gets nominated. I certainly would call it bad direction by any means.
No, not at all.
Not at this point in De Palma's career.
No.
But
just wait.
John Hirschfeld for Two of a Kind. I have to agree.
Pretty bad.
That's all. It's kind of TV movie shot. It doesn't look good, and
it feels like an after school special kind of look.
It's missed. Yeah, just. I haven't watched it in a while, but it's just not.
It sounds like a movie Mary Kate and Ashley Olsen would be in, like Two of a Kind on Hallmark.
Too far, yeah. So I apologize. I have Olivia and John, but Hal Needham for Stroke Race. But the winner was Peter Sasdy for The Lonely Lady.
Peter Sasdy, congratulations.
And finally, Worst Picture. So,
here it is.
Movies we've all talked about. So, nominees: Hercules, Jaws 3D, Stroker Ace, Two of a Kind, and the winner is The Lonely Lady.
The Lonely Lady. Lonely Lady did very well this year.
Have you seen The Lonely Lady?
I was not one of the four people that saw it in its original release. Is it a movie you'll want? Oh, there it is. Look at you.
On Blu-ray. On Blu-ray.
So you're a big fan.
Well, here's the thing. It is a trashy movie, for sure.
Okay.
But I love it.
Yeah.
It's dirty and wrong and bad acting and but
how big is Ray Liotta's part in it?
Not too, he's just in a couple scenes, but he is in such a pivotal graphic, you'll never erase it from your mind scene.
Really?
Yeah.
So this was really stands out.
This was his first feature film. Yeah.
Oh.
That he appeared in. So.
Wow. Yeah. He was really young then.
Yeah. He is. So I was at 13, 14 when this be on cable, and me and my neighbor friend, you know, be watching these R-rated movies late at night and laughing. And he has one of the best lines in the movie, which I can't repeat here either, but.
Oh, wow. I'm just reading the synopsis of it, and it looks pretty. Yeah,
read the synopsis for viewers that may not be familiar with The Lonely Lady.
The Lonely Lady from 1983. Wow. It takes place in the San Fernando Valley?
It does. I'll talk a little bit about that, but go ahead.
I'm just not even going to repeat what I just read in this description here. I'm sorry, I can't.
You'll be like, why are you watching this?
Garden Hose?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the Ray Liotta scene.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now everybody has to go Google this. Nice cup, by the way. Is that Halloween 2?
It is a Halloween 2 cup.
Oh, it's perfect.
What else would you be drinking out of?
Except that's so great.
Movie sequels, t-shirts, and cups.
You have to. It's perfect.
With Dexter coasters. And...
Oh, yeah. So cool. No, it's awesome. It's a little bit of flair everywhere you look. Well, The Lonely Lady, how often do you watch it?
I mean, do you never...
Yeah.
Not very often. And actually, I only purchased the Blu-ray recently because I think Shout Factory had a thing. And Pia Zadora has a long interview on it. And I was kind of curious what her thoughts are on it, you know. And she now she says she knows how bad it was and how bad she was. But at the time, it was like she had a very rich husband that pretty much paid to have this movie made, paid more or less to have it distributed, and everything. So it's one of those. But I would be open, and it's based on a book. And I've not read the book by Harold Robbins, but it has some killer lines, and dare I say, I mean, part of it is it's talking about the predicament women are put into, to what they have to do to try to rise to the top.
Yeah. It shed some light on that. And that was rampant in the early 80s, of course.
So they filmed, and actually, so it's on my location list. Cause I remember before kind of Beyond the Impression, they shot mostly in Rome, I think, a little bit in England. Mm. Cause I knew for the Dorothy Chandler Pavilion, they filmed that. They made a fake looking, you know, they didn't shoot there. And so from my memory until recently was that they shot all, they didn't really shoot in LA at all, but they did a lot of establishing shots and some shots with Pia and whatever in LA. So I've been working on those locations, so it'll be ready in time for the anniversary.
What is the date of that?
I don't know. I just know it's hopefully I get it done before the anniversary because it's 1983. So,
oh yeah,
whenever the release date was for that. So,
and this week you released on your website. I think I saw The Birds, or was that last week?
It might have been last week. I'm trying to think what has been recent. So today was Scream 4.
Nice.
39th anniversary of Friday the 13th, the final chapter. So
yes.
The sweetest
That's
thing.
That's a special one, the final chapter.
Yes. So next year, 40th anniversary. Super special. The sweetest thing, which was having its 21st anniversary. I don't know how these things, time goes so fast, but.
Yeah. It does really fly.
Oh, Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 2.
There it is.
Had its anniversary this week.
Very nice.
So Garbage Day.
Garbage Day.
Doesn't get better than that.
It does not. Okay, coming up next, we have a special stick around right after this break where we hear a word from our sponsor, the new Omaha Museum of Love. It's not a real museum.
I was like, what?
I did want to do a trailer, though, today, Robert. This is, some might call Madonna's second greatest movie ever. And you being the Madonna king that understands everything, will appreciate All the Way May. Being the Jackie Robinson day today, and I thought an appropriate trailer would be A League of Their Own. Were you a theatrical, was this a theatrical viewing of yours, Robert?
Yeah, opening weekend, because I was big into Madonna at that time. So was this 92, I want to say?
Yes.
If I remember, yes, so I think I actually was on a date, if I remember right. But
oh, nice.
But yeah, so I remember... yeah, so I definitely saw this in the theater because I was like, yeah, I was at Madonna Can Do No Wrong time. Yeah. And let's see her on the big screen. So, but yeah, let's take a look at the trailer.
Let us take a look.
All the Way May.
All the Way May.
Do you have sound?
Nope. Oh. I was hoping you would reenact the sound, Robert. Oh. All major theme parks have their glitches.
Yeah, but when League of Their Own shuts down.
Madonna doesn't flash the audience.
I'd like to lead you all in a little prayer. Dear Lord, may our feet be swift. May our bats be mighty. May our balls be plentiful. And Lord, I just like to thank you for that waitress in South Bend. You know who she is. She kept calling your name.
This summer, Tom Hanks is managing the impossible, the Rockford Peaches.
Go Peaches!
Says girls can't play baseball. Who says women can't throw?
Slide! Slide! Thank you!
Sounded good.
So let's all root for the girls' team. Let's give the poor coach a break.
still missing the cutoff man. Now, that's something that I would like you to work on before next season.
Columbia Pictures would like to take you out to the ball game for an all-star comedy.
They'll pay you $75 a week.
We only make 30 at the dairy.
Well then, this would be more, wouldn't it?
The manager, Tom Hanks.
Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
The catcher, Gina Davis.
Well, you see, we slip in the back seat. You make a man out of me.
What if I smack you around for a while?
Can't we do both?
The pitcher, Lori Petty.
I made it. I'm a Pete. A Rockford Pete.
The scout, John Lovitz.
Are you coming? See how it works is, the train moves, not the station.
And batting cleanup, Madonna.
What if my uniform bursts open and, oops, my bosoms come flying out?
You think there are men in this country who ain't seen your bosoms?
A league of their own.
All right. God knows we have a game. It's not like any of this helps, believe me.
Oh, directed, I wish they showed Madonna and the church when the priest comes out. I wish they showed Madonna when the priest comes out swearing.
I know. That's why I was wondering if they were going to. That's an awful trailer. Come on out and watch
the baseball cards on the screen. I was like, that's so weird.
I don't remember. You see that trailer, I'm like, I don't want to go see this.
It's not a good trailer. It's a great movie. It's a terrible trailer.
I don't remember ever seeing that trailer, or maybe I'm sure I had at some point, but I'm surprised. I would be like, this is not the movie for me. And the whole kind of almost like 1960s, like, see your stars playing baseball. Yeah.
See the stars come out. And that song is awful.
Yeah. But ignoring the trailer, I guess.
For that.
But the movie itself, it still holds up very well to me. And it's always, when it's a good journey, it's always kind of emotional at the end. Obviously, when you see the real Rockford Peaches and obviously the kind of move forward in years. I need to double check on how many years it's supposed to be between when we have the older actors, you know. Playing them to, we'll compare the old Madonna to what Madonna looks like.
It's 1988 is when that
88. So, and so when is the film supposed to take place? I can't remember.
41.
So it's not quite been that long yet, but
44 years.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Gina looks the same.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
She actually is not aged at all, but
no, she's great in that. I love Gina Davis. And, Madonna's great in there too. It's just such a great movie. It's one of those movies I wish at the time they had merchandise like they do today. Like I thought it'd be cool to get like a Rockford Peach shirt or something like that. They just didn't have them in 1992, you know, unless you like ordered them from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think there was whatever. Anything though. I do see quite a bit of people dressed up as the Rockford Peaches at Madonna's concerts. They do kind of come. As a team, there's usually three or four.
I never thought about that. That's perfect.
For sure. I do remember. So Deborah Winger left the movie because of Madonna. If you did not know,
I did not know. Was there a fight?
She was the Well, she did. If Madonna was going to be in the movie, it was not going to be her type of movie. So she left, and she had done a lot of work and did practices and baseball. So she felt that strongly that having Madonna in the movie was going to totally change everything. And make it
that's a really shitty reason to leave a movie. Well, if anything, that will blow it up more.
Yeah. And so she's, well, Deborah Winger obviously has had her shitty moments.
Yeah.
Despite,
that's for sure.
You know, and if anything, I mean, like, this is probably her best acting. That obviously she's not in a lead role here, but
yeah,
it kind of works for her.
It's up there.
But
it's no Dick Tracy, but
yeah. But I'm glad. Yeah, I'm glad Gina Davis is the lead.
No, she's great.
Lori Petty's actually even good. I shouldn't say Eve, but
you feel for Gina Davis when the scene where she thinks Bob might have died at war and home and
Bill Pullman is that Bob?
Yeah.
Which I still for a while, it took a couple years for me to take him seriously after Ruthless People, because I was like, every time he'd show up, I'm like, come on. It's like come Leslie on. Nielsen being the dramatic lead.
That's true.
I remember stories when they were filming that people were picketing because Madonna was in town filming.
Yes, you know, I read something on that recently, how she was staying at like some house and there were people like so adamant wherever she was filming that, like she was in this. It's like, talk about what a mess.
Yeah. But God forbid, should there be, and in 2023, a sexualized woman. Not on our backyard.
Not our backyard. Not happening.
But yeah, so it is still a good movie.
Fun.
I know you're a fan, more of a fan than I am of This Used to Be My Playground, but
Used to Be My Playground. It's kind of a cool music video for a 1992 video, doing the pages.
Flipping the pages. Yeah, it was pretty good special effects.
Kind of cool.
I think I became less of a fan during that time because it became the eyebrowless era.
Oh yeah, yes.
Where they were taken off and then penciled back in like grandma, and I'm like, oh,
what are you doing?
Like that version of Madonna. But
yeah, right. It wasn't your favorite era of hers.
It was not, but I love dark hair brunette Madonna.
Yeah, sure. Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
I think it probably suits her better.
Is A League of Their Own her? It grossed $132 million. Was that her most successful movie?
I don't know.
Austin Powers, if you want to.
I don't know. I'd count that, but I'm sure Evita did pretty well too. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so good for her.
Good for her.
Yeah. Her and Rosie got to be friends because of this movie. So it all worked out the way it was supposed to. So
yeah.
They made two TV series out of it.
Right.
So one came out not too shortly after, which was I think John Lovitz was in it still. And a couple of the other kind of minor players, but it was not good. But I haven't watched the new one that came out last year either. But
Trivia for you. The Racing Bells were one of the teams they played. Do you know the names of the other two that were prominently featured?
I do not.
Kenosha Comets, okay. And the South Bend Blue Sox. You only hear about them for like a second.
It was right on the tip of my tongue.
And there's one there, but everyone remembers the Racing Bells because they're like the big rivalry in there.
Kit
gets traded to them. So. A League of Their Own holds up, though. It's a fun movie.
It is. So, it's mostly kind of Midwestern locations. There's one house. So Dottie's house in the film was also the house used in Candyman. Little location trivia there. So,
the one on the farm?
No. So her house, I think, when she...
Oh, when she's old.
Or something like that. Yeah. So.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, it's just a brief...
Thing. It's like in Studio City, right?
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. It just kind of looks like that kind of your typical house. But funny because both were kind of shot Midwestish and Illinois, except for both Candyman and League of Their Own were kind of Midwestern shot films, but
the
same LA house by chance.
And it does look like a Studio City house. More broadly, it does feel like a Midwest house. But when you know it's Studio City, you're like, it makes sense because Studio City houses, for whatever reason, look different than Burbank and North Hollywood. They have like their own, the way the streets are like pushed together more.
They look like backlot houses in Studio City because I think they have less straight streets too.
So they do.
That's usually the indication of a backlot of like, and the street goes off to a bend,
and then it's gone
to the, restaurant. Anyway.
Right. You turn around and you're at the police station.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. But yeah, cool. You didn't do a page for League of Their Own, have you?
I did not. So there's other people that have gone cross country and done. It's filmed there. I know Chaz has done that from what I remember for sure. So, but I'll leave them to that. So I don't be traveling across the Midwest for.
No, I don't want to be doing that. And finally, we have Blind Man's Bluff. Robert, this is a fun one, and I'm going to read the excerpt. And you tell me if you can guess what it is.
Okay.
As an 80s kid, when I heard that they were creating a TV series for this, I was beyond excited. Can you imagine causing this much havoc on a weekly basis? Well, that's not quite what we got. While there were some interesting episodes, it never quite lived up to its title. I'll be curious if the newest incarnation on the small screen will be any better, if
it actually ever happens.
I thought I knew what it was until the end, but I'm still going to guess. Is it Friday the 13th, the series?
That is absolutely correct, sir. All right. Yes. Good job. I didn't watch this until we first started doing the show, and you sent me a full episode of it on over YouTube.
Oh, yeah?
And I watched it, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
Friday the 13th. So.
Oh, my gosh. Tell us about this. But you did a great job with this page, though.
Thanks. And I think it's just kind of a one-off. Obviously, a TV series, you can do many, many locations. So I remember, obviously, in the 80s, when you heard them make a Friday the 13th, the series, your mind starts going wild of like, oh, my God, Jason,
yeah,
every week, and who knows what's going to happen.
How do you do it?
Yeah, not going to happen. Otherwise, it's
not happening.
Haunted artifacts, almost kind of like, you know, when the Amityville movies, like a different artifact from every week. It probably would have done better with a different title, for sure.
It should have been a different title.
Yeah, but you
know, there's too much hype on it. You just want to see Jason every week.
But people tuned in because obviously it was for a while, and it lasted, I think, 3 seasons. So, Curious Goods.
Curious Goods
was the name of the, and actually, I think that's probably a net title for our name of many kind of antique stores. So when I was in Toronto, I just decided to kind of check out the exterior location that they used, mostly in the pilot and then for kind of establishing shots and throughout the series. And I was actually there with Sean Clark of Horror Solid Grounds. We were spending the day in Toronto going to all these different locations. And I think we illegally parked.
Curious parking ticket that day.
It was kind of an outdoor, not kind of mall, you know, kind of they kind of reconstrued kind of this kind of urban factory area, whatever, and there's no good parking. You can tell it's kind of busy, but I was like, we have to get this shot, especially before it's dark. And so they were kind of curious. They let us take pictures inside, but only on one way for some reason. He's like, well, you can take pictures looking this way, but not that way. I'm like, all right.
Oh, really?
And they really only used the inside in the pilot. But so all these shots, and as you kind of look through, were mostly from the pilot episode.
The Inheritance.
Yeah. And I think.
Okay, this is inside Curious Goods.
Yep. So, and obviously they used a set at some point. But usually the pilot is kind of shot by itself. So
where shot, Sean's facing is.
This is my illegal shot. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to say, because if you got the other side. Okay.
Yeah. So, but like I said, they didn't shoot too much into there, and they were, people get, sometimes get weirded out. I'm like, nobody was even in the store, you know, like, you know, we're not here to take pictures of the clothes. So
somebody was upset you were doing that.
Well, the owner was like, well, you can do this, but not. I'm like, all right, dude.
Oh, you know what you should have done? Just remind them that you're American.
We do what we want.
We do what we want. That's all for now. What does that mean? Is that a line, or was that?
No, that's all I got for now. I think I like maybe someday I will do more locations, but and below that is actually kind of one of my favorite. It's not a prop, but when they released the TV series to certain TV stations, they gave this press kit and photos, whatever, and this nice kind of foam.
Oh, that's cool.
Tombstone with fake grass and everything, and so for 1987 it holds up, has held up pretty well.
That
actually
does hold up. And is that like a storage container?
Yeah, so that's where they put the press kit and stuff. So
that is so cool. That's a nice touch, actually.
Yeah, so, and actually it's on display in my house too. So
wow, this is, oh, is it really?
Yeah, yeah, it was just kind it, of,
you're taking good care of it.
Yeah, every once in a while you can find these on eBay, but not too often. So, and there's also kind of a lesser version of it where it's almost, it feels like a cheaper version for some reason, but I feel like I got one of the good ones.
And on your, and you did get one of the good ones. It looks like it's very pristine.
Of course.
On setjetter.com, folks, you can also look at the Friday the 13th locations map. Robert has put together a Google Maps, and you can see kind of, this is from the original.
Yeah, so part one, part two.
Is this three, Hackettstown? Part, yeah. I thought it was Blairsville, New Jersey.
It kind of,
but depends. You would know better.
Yeah, so all over the place, which I haven't been to a lot of the East Coast ones, but
You don't do a lot of trips to the East Coast.
No, not like I used to, and I, certainly not driving around. Usually, if I go to New York or Philly or, you know, I just go around that area. But
I think it'd be fun if you took one trip for like one shot, and people are like, Robert, there was like 80 movies filmed here. You're like, I just need to finish this page. That's it.
That's usually sometimes what happens. Like, I don't have time to do all of them, but don't worry, I'm working on The Lonely Lady.
The Lonely Lady, I'll be on it. Yeah, I'm sure it takes a certain amount of restraint when you're in certain areas of like, which ones should I do? Which ones do I need to do?
Oh, yeah. Even if they're nearby, I was like, do I have time?
Yeah.
What takes priority? And then there's stuff like where you're like, oh, this is, you know, yeah, this will be another 20 minutes out of the way. But it's like,
right, what do I do?
And this is where I'm like, I don't care about that movie. What am I doing?
Yeah, I need to get more Corky Romano.
Well, exactly. I mean, I did make a special trip all the way out to wherever that was for Corky Romano for the vet's office. That was
Santa Clarita, right?
A condo. Yeah, it was like.
Yeah, yeah, it was like super, somebody's home. That
super, super random. That I in their driveway taking pictures. I'm like, it's Corky Romano.
It's Corky
Romano. All right, guy.
All right, guy. Which clearly was like a producer's home or something. They're like, just shoot here.
I'm sure it was illegal filming.
Yeah. Oh, total gorilla, 100%. All right. Well, that'll be your show tonight, Robert, unless you had anything else you wanted to add.
No, that's good for this week.
That is good for this week, folks. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in and listening to Set Jetter Saturdays, and we will see you on the set.